taking responsibility for actions. That's something new for Washington, D.C. To get specific, here's the purveyor of political accountability, Dan Newman.
Here we are on the last day of the month of May, 2018. It has just flown by. Summer is officially here. Well, not until, I think, the 21st of June, but tomorrow will be the first day of June. And I don't know where you are today, but it's hot where I am. Hot, sticky, humid. It is already summer. And speaking of May flying by quickly, boy, did a lot happen during the month of May. We have a lot to talk about today. And what I want to concentrate on today is just exactly how visible the hatred, the anger in Washington, D.C. is escalating at a rapid rate against this President Donald Trump. Now, please understand this. I'm an American. I come from a generation that predates this generation and the last generation. I'm actually a baby boomer born in 1953. Culture, society, politics was way different in that generation. We looked at our government leaders in a different light. We didn't have access to social media. We didn't have access to satellite television and radio. Nobody knew about the internet until it was invented by Al Gore, if you listen to Al Gore. Nevertheless, we had three television networks, ABC, CBS, and NBC. And then we had some national radio programs, but most of our news came from a local or regional basis. We got it from local television. I grew up in Lafayette, Louisiana, South Louisiana. We had, again, three network stations there. We got our news locally mixed in with national news from those three stations. So whatever their perspective was in the news and the way they reported the news was pretty much believed by everyone at the time, because the resources weren't there. The availability to look under and behind and expose wasn't there like it is today. So maybe a lot of what we thought then and felt then was incorrect. And remember the old saying that we use here at dnewman.org often: just because you think something's true doesn't mean it's true. But the other side of that coin is, just because you believe something is wrong doesn't necessarily mean that it's wrong. Fortunately for us, we today have the resources to investigate, to fact check. And when I say investigate and fact check, I'm not talking about those websites like Snopes.com and factcheck.org. Those websites are actually run by political folks, political elitists actually, that have a political perspective. And when they give us quote-unquote facts, they are not necessarily facts. We have to find the time and the way to go to the sources of information to get the facts for ourselves. That makes it really tough. And so what I've been able to do through the years is, you know, I put up the old BS antenna, and I listen to everybody. I'm one of those guys. I don't like to sit down a lot and watch a lot of news unless there's something very big going on. I love to read. I like the executive summary, the sound bites of news, just to get the top stuff. And when something piques my interest, when I see the headline or read the headline or hear the headline, then I can dig in as I determine I want to know and understand what's going on. I do that for myself, but I am very into taking the time to understand. Unfortunately for America today, and it bleeds out across the globe because it initiates here in America, with all of the media availability to us, America is built totally on sound bites. As I like to do, which is look at and listen to and read the headlines and then dig into the stories that I think are important for me to know and understand the details about, almost all Americans stay at the top line. There is no digging in. When that happens, what they believe is pretty much always determined by what someone else says. It's not determined by them digging for themselves and getting those facts. So, to be honest with you, with this environment that we have today, the political elitist, the West Coast, the coastal Potomac political elites are controlling the political narrative in Washington, D.C. on the most part, and with the media in the liberals' pockets, the liberal narrative takes front and center in almost every circumstance. Case in point, we'll talk about several things during this show today, but case in point, one happened yesterday. Yesterday, President Trump signed into law a sweeping pharmacy law that is going to take a lot of pressure off of pharmacy companies that want to duplicate, do the, I forget the actual terminology, the generic drugs, the restrictions and guidelines there that protect the original pharmacy company that spends all the money on research and development and want to keep those prices sky high. It's a situation where you can go to Canada and buy the same drug for 40 or 50% of what you pay for the same drug in a pharmacy in the United States. That's going away, and drug prices are going to come down dramatically. Also, for research drugs that very ill Americans want to volunteer and at their own risk take those drugs for severe life-ending illnesses that they may have, it's always been restricted. Payers won't pay it because it's experimental drugs. And with that same piece of legislation, that restriction has been removed. So if you have cancer and there is a particular type of therapy or treatment that you think will, there's a good chance of extending your life, now you can go get it. You don't have to fight and just look ahead and count the days until those six people come and carry you to your grave. You can make the choice for yourself to extend your life by using those experimental drugs. How many of the networks today has that story been on? How many? Do you know that two of the four major networks didn't even report on it? You know why? It did not fit the political coastal Potomac elitist narrative. That narrative is this, very simply. Donald Trump is an idiot. Donald Trump is a liar. He's a misogynist. He's a racist. He's an Islamophobe. He hates immigrants. And he is filthy rich and only caters to the wealthy people in America. He's anti-world, and he is only about himself. Nothing that doesn't feed that narrative is promoted or even given decent coverage by today's media. So how does that all play into what's going on in Washington, D.C.? Well, what is going on in Washington, D.C.? We hear all these things. The midterm elections are coming up, and it depends on which network you listen to. The Republicans are going to blow the Democrats away. The Democrats are going to take back the House, going to take back the Senate. If they take back the House, they're going to file articles of impeachment against Donald Trump. It's just the noise. It's just noise. It goes on and on and on. But undergirding all of the noise, this is very important. Very important, people. We've got to understand there is an objective. There is a goal, and it's not just getting rid of Donald Trump and kicking him out of the White House. It's destroying the message, the track, the commitments of this president to the American people that Washington, D.C. is scared to death is going to take over America. And what is that? What is that? It's American individualism. It's accomplishment based on achievement, based on commitment, based on a work ethic, and it's driven mostly by the middle class. The political, coastal, Potomac elites want that to die and go away. And on the most part, especially in the last 8 years before the Trump presidency, the Trump administration, it was well on its way to the cemetery, because there is a class of politicians in Washington, D.C. that all bought in, or not all, but most of them, many of them bought into that theory that the government knows more about your life, what's good for you, what's right for you, what's best for you than you will ever know. And you must let the government tell you what you need and let the government provide it for you and give you the resources the government thinks is necessary for you to have a happy, productive life as they define what that is, not you. And so confiscatory tax policies came in and oppressive government regulations came in, were passed and initiated. And guess what all of that was built and designed to do and implemented and operating very successfully before the Make America Great Again campaign began? Control. Power and control had been handed very blindly by the American public to the political coastal Potomac elites in Washington, D.C. We turned over our lives to them, folks. They said, okay, we're going to do all this for you. Give us all your money. We're going to tax you. We're not going to ask you to give it to us. We're going to change tax policies. We are going to crush you with regulations that are going to keep people who go out and start companies, entrepreneurs, from being able to do that anymore. You won't be able to do anything unless the government says it's okay and tells you how you're going to have to do it. And they're going to control it during the process of making it, building it, growing it, and operating it. They're going to have the final say-so on everything. The American dream of getting a creative idea, having a creative spirit, an entrepreneurial spirit, willing to risk all of the important financial things in your life, often many years of your life in preparation spent in college, in training, in seeding a brand new startup company, all of those are gone. They've been taken away from us. There is a generation of Americans right now that just automatically have been entrenched through social education. You hear about socialism and socialized government? Socialized education in public schools has taken individualism away, the very idea of personal achievement, away from a whole generation of American children. Young adults today do not understand what it is to be able to come up with an idea and turn it into a multimillion dollar company. They don't understand that. And with that coming into the fiber of America over the last decade or so, with that comes an abandonment of responsibility. Nobody wants to work for anything anymore. Everybody wants the ability to have, to do. Meism has taken over America, which is, I'm going to accumulate everything I can with the least amount of effort on my part. Somebody owes me something. Give me something, mister. That attitude controls an entire generation of young Americans today. And it came through the education system. The education system itself, that's another show that we'll talk about later. But it is full of people that very arrogantly in our faces practice that philosophy. And so what do we have now? We have a whole class of Americans that live in Washington, D.C. that were given the keys to the kingdom during the Obama administration. And it was illustrated best by the former president himself. You remember in that speech, he made the statement, and I'm paraphrasing what he said, you own a business? You think you made that business successful? You think you built it? You think it's yours? You're wrong. The roads and infrastructure that were put in there, the materials that built that factory, the sales contracts you got, they all came on the backs of people that were propped up by the federal government. That's the philosophy. That's the fundamental change of America that he told us he wanted to implement during his presidency. He was honest from the very beginning when he told us that. He wanted actualization by hard work and commitment to go away and for Big Brother, Washington, D.C., to step in and control it all. And boy, he's almost gotten his way. But somebody new walked through the door, and somebody new slammed the door on political coastal Potomac elitism, a billionaire that doesn't owe anybody anything, no political favoritism necessary, and he's changing the fabric, destroying political elitism in America, one step at a time. And you know what? As he does that, it is scaring those elitists to death. When we come back, we're going to share some examples, and we're going to get you thinking about where to look and what to watch for moving ahead. And it's good news, folks. It's good news. Sit tight.
In every age, a technology is created that upends the foundations of society. The wheel, the printing press, the internet. Now, in a world sliding into financial chaos, a new technology is changing the way monetary systems work around the world. It is called Bitcoin. Bitcoin is a new form of money controlled not by banks, governments, or corporations, but through mutual commerce between free individuals. To learn more, visit weusecoins.com.
Hi, Tom Baudet. Of all the things invented in 1962, some have faded away, like cassette tapes, and others are still very much with us, like lava lamps and Motel 6. Yep, Motel 6 is celebrating 50 years of giving travelers a good night's rest and saving you more for what you travel for. But we're just getting started. In fact, the longer you watch us, the better we get. Kind of like a lava lamp. Trippy. I'm Tom Baudet for Motel 6. 50 years and the light's still on.
Don't ever miss a story or podcast. Get an email link to every new story and podcast by entering your email address on the homepage of dnewman.org. If it's relevant, you'll get it here.
And boy, is it relevant, and are you getting it here? Thank you for joining us at dnewman.org. The day before, the first day of summer, June is just around the corner. We've been talking about the big power junkies that are taking over Washington, D.C., and what is happening as the big guy that is often accused of a funky tanning look because whatever he's using kind of turns his skin a little bit different color, and they make fun of his hair, they make fun of his size, his weight. What they don't make fun of is his tremendous accumulations and successes in the world around him. But what they don't like to talk about is his successes in his first year of his administration as president of the United States. And there have been many. We won't go into them. You know most of them. You've shared them. Early in the life at dnewman.org, we actually did three very lengthy post that detailed the details of his accomplishments in his first 100 days. And it took three, I guess about 1,500, 2,000 word stories to simply list them all. They're almost uncountable. But because of the power brokers in Washington, D.C., and the media elites that were actually run by the demo Nazis that call themselves America's Party, the Democrat Party, because of all of that, you don't hear about it. And unless you dig in for yourself and research and look for facts, you're not going to hear about it unless you come here regularly to dnewman.org. So what's going on in politics? You know, you hear something every once in a while. Somebody on one of the news shows or a talk show will say something, and it kind of scares you because you don't really understand what's going on. What really hacks me off is when a guest will come on a show and make some outlandish statement, and whoever is hosting the show or conducting the interview doesn't confront them when they say those things, and it drags on and it's just left hanging out in the air. People that are listening and watching don't know what's going on. But have you wondered about this one thing? Reportedly, there are 40 plus Republican sitting Congress members in the House of Representatives that have either decided they're not going to run, they're going to retire, or for any one of a number of reasons, they're not going to try to come back and be reelected this fall. Trey Gowdy is a prime example. He announced He's through with politics. And I really like Trey Gowdy. I think he would have been a much better attorney general selection than Senator Jeff Sessions. Although I like Jeff on a personal basis, I think he's not doing a very good job as the attorney general. That, again, is fodder for another show. We'll talk about that later. And I don't know if Trey Gowdy fits into this category that I'm about to share with you. But let me tell you, a lot of people think, and those on the left, the leftist media, they throw this bomb out there in the middle of the room expecting, and there are a lot of people that believe it, they expect everybody to believe it, that they don't want to be a part of this Trump administration because he embarrasses them or they don't like it. They don't like him. You know, I thought that was probably true for a while, but let me tell you what I think is really going on. I think they are scared to death. They are petrified of exposure. What's going to happen with all of these investigations that are ongoing? Michael Horowitz, the Inspector General for the Justice Department, is about to release any day now the details of the real investigation conducted by his department on the email misuse and all the fodder that goes along with that by Hillary Clinton and the Clinton campaign. And it's going to be really nasty when that comes out. And there will be, I'm sure, indictments that come from that. I think these men and women that aren't coming back, that aren't trying, many of them are trying their best to get out of Dodge before they get exposed. And what they've done, not really wanting the job, not really liking the job, not really serving the people that send them up there, they cannot, have not been able to say, no, I'm not going to do it anymore, because there's so much good, and that word good I'm using is in quotation marks, there's so much that goes along with being a member of Congress, lots of money, lots of opportunity, and very few of them go to Washington, D.C. as millionaires, multimillionaires. I know you know that. There are some that go, but very few of them go. But I don't know of a one that leaves Washington not being a millionaire. How does that happen unless the goodie bags are abundant for them in Washington, D.C.? Now, there are all kinds of laws and regulations, but you know what? Those laws and regulations apply to those members. It doesn't apply to their extended family members. So there are all kinds of goodies that go that are thrown out there. There are promises of jobs after they leave. K Street in Washington, D.C. is full of PR firms that all they do is lobby. And they make millions of dollars lobbying members of Congress when they leave Congress and go to K Street. There was always great conversation before almost every election that says, we're going to stop. We're going to make it so that all members of Congress cannot serve as lobbyists when they leave Congress. It's never happened and it never will. Why do they keep giving themselves raises when you haven't been getting raises? Why is that? You know why that is? Because they can do it, folks. They can vote themselves a pay raise. You have no say-so or no input. And by the time election time comes around, they've convinced you to forget about that. They needed it because it's so stinking expensive to live in Washington, D.C. and travel back and forth to their districts that you think, oh, well, and some new trouble has come up, some new incident that has happened that we need to concentrate on more than concentrating on that. When they run the show lock, stock, and barrel, the only threat to them is to be exposed. And the sheriff has come to the kitchen, and he's turned the light on in the kitchen. I live in the South. When I go to the kitchen at night, thankfully it's not in this house that I live in, but I remember years ago when I really lived way down in South Louisiana and we didn't have air conditioning, when you turn the lights on in the kitchen during the middle of the night, the roaches scrambled all over the floor looking for cover. They're scrambling, folks. They're scrambling. Not every one of them. I don't want to denigrate any of them, but I can tell you for a fact, there are a bunch of them that are getting out of Dodge before somebody makes it too hot in Dodge City. And then the others that are hanging around, especially some of the leadership on the left, not just the left. On the right, there are a ton of them that are bailing. And before they bail, they're out there saying not very positive things about this administration, not very positive things about pending legislation. And they constantly fall into the political narrative that's promoted by the elitist, the coastal Potomac elitist. And that is, this president doesn't like immigrants. We've got at least 12 million undocumented immigrants in the United States, probably more than that. And all of the trouble that's happening down at the southern border, you know, the false pictures that came out the other day of two children in a cage at the southern border, and it was Trump that did it, and it turns out, now this was the New York Times that published that. That was a retraction, but they never see the retraction. Put it out there and blamed it on Trump. It was actually during the Obama administration in 2014. It's all Trump's fault. Everything bad is Trump's fault. But guess what? He can't change immigration policy or immigration laws. He's tried to, and every time he's done anything to stop the flow and the potential terrorist immigration, undocumented immigration into the United States, they go to court and stop it. Who controls immigration? Congress. Congress. Now, President Obama, at one point in his 8 years, he had the White House, he had the House, and he had the Senate. Could not pass comprehensive immigration laws to fix those problems. Right now, there's a Republican House of Representatives, a Republican Senate, and a Republican sitting in the White House. They won't even take up a comprehensive immigration bill right now. They're too busy. They got other stuff they got to do. In the meantime, you have 12 million people that are sitting out there, at least 12 million, and they're sucking up the infrastructure of the United States. They're soaking up education tax dollars. They're soaking up health care paid for by us. They get stipends. Illegal immigrant families get money to live on, funded by you and me, $18,000 to $25,000 per family, some even more. And what do they do to get it? They came into the country illegally. They get accosted at the border. They're put into the immigration system that is plugged up with too many people and not enough people to take care of the issue. And so in Washington, no immigration reform. What does that mean? Status quo. That's the bottom line for all of this, folks. Everything going on in Washington, D.C., from the left and from the right, is to maintain. They don't want any major changes. They like it the way it is. So what do? You got some drive-by shooters that all they do is stand out there and scream and holler. Two specifically that drive me crazy. One is, both of them are in the House of Representatives from California. One of them is Adam Schiff, and he's the one that's taking on Devin Nunes. He's on MSNBC. I guess he's on CNN a bunch, and he was on ABC this last weekend. Every time you turn on a news show, you can see a quote, you can see an interview with Adam Schiff, Democrat of California. And he's gone crazy. He's gone absolutely nuts. He's made it very clear he hates the president. He thinks the president is evil. He thinks the president, he doesn't think. He said from the very beginning, there is factual information that proves the Trump administration, the Trump campaign, colluded with Russia to take the election in 2016. Of course, he won't deliver the facts. He won't reveal the facts. And so there are no facts. But when you say it on the news, there are a bunch of people that believe it. Remember, we talked about people don't investigate for themselves. And so now he and several of his compadres are attacking members of the House of Representatives for supporting this president and getting things done in the Trump agenda. The ones that support that, they hate. And so they've started attacking them. Getting those things done legislatively by the Republican Congress, when it happens, Adam Schiff said this on ABC's News this week, Sunday, quote, "The only thing that makes this possible is a Congress that is complicit. He said it this week, naming several conservative leaders in the Republican Party and accusing a weak speaker, Paul Ryan of Wisconsin, of refusing to stand up for the independence of the Justice Department. And of course, he's talking about that meeting they had last week that Democrats demanded they be a part of. Of course, we don't know any of the details that came out of the meeting, but you know, the Republicans were wrong, and they're trying to influence the Justice Department just by asking the Justice Department to tell them what's going on. He said further, as long as there's a majority in Congress that is willing to do this president's will, and as long as we have a deeply unethical president, there's only one remedy, throw the bums out, Schiff said. Throw the bums out. Well, he's got somebody else that's a big friend of his that followed up on it. And he's another guy from California that just drives me crazy, Democrat Representative Eric Swalwell. When he got on the news, and he's on CNN, MSNBC all the time, when he got on the news, it was President Trump's characterizations of the FBI and the Mueller investigation. He didn't like that. On CNN, he had a slightly different tone when he was asked by host Erica Hill about what Adam Schiff said bums his comment from Sunday morning. And this is what Swalwell said. As long as there's a majority in Congress that is willing to do this president's will, and as long as we have a deeply unethical president, there's only one remedy. Schiff said this, throw the bums out. And to keep you up to speed, Swalwell talking about Schiff, talking about Republicans in Congress and needing to, because they're bums, be thrown out. In his interview, he was asked this. As we look at this, if this is really leading by example, when you resort to calling your colleagues on the other side of the aisle bums, is that what members of Congress should do? How is it that really that is really leading by example? How is that taking the high road? How is that moving things forward? Swalwell replied to her, well, what it is saying is you're actually worse than bums if you don't stand up to a president attacking a former FBI director, a patriot who served our country in Vietnam like Bob Mueller. You're worse than a bum if you are allowing the president to cash in the Oval Office and put Chinese workers ahead of the American workers when your company is taking a $500 million loan from Indonesia. You're worse than a bum allowing your daughter to receive trademarks from the Chinese while you're executing trade deals. So, you know, I think he was probably being kind to them when he said, throw the bums out. Now, the bums they're talking about, folks, that need to be thrown out are people that you, most of you listening to this, pulled the lever for in the voting booth in 2016. And so what that does, you remember the famous Hillary Clinton campaign speech when she called most of Trump supporters deplorables, living in a basket with a bunch of other deplorables. What Schiff and Swalwell are saying echoes the political elite and what the narrative in D.C. is and why so many Congress members are bailing, fearing exposure. It's because they are scared to death they're going to lose their power. If the majority in the House and the majority in the Senate increases, there are enough Republicans that are objective, that are serving, that are honest, that are watching, that are listening, that are going to finally listen to the voters, the people they all work for, the people the president works for, and say, by pulling the lever again and again, we are going to vote for whoever is going to do the right thing. And these two guys, they don't fall in that category, but it gets even deeper. We played a couple of days ago, we played a quote from Nancy Pelosi on the Kim Jong-un meeting scheduled for June 12th that's temporarily been canceled. At a press conference after the cancellation, she took the lectern. She was queried about the news. She said the North Korean leader was the big winner, of course. Pelosi said, quote, I think it's a good thing for Kim Jong-un. Here you had a thug, a person who killed his own family members, a person who runs a police state, being legitimized by the president of the United States. They were on par with each other. He got global recognition and regard. He's the big winner. When he got this letter from the president saying, okay, never mind, he must be having a giggle fit right there in North Korea. A gigafit. So that's where the first part of today's podcast title came from, gigafit. What about crumbs? You remember, on January 11th, Pelosi was asked at a news conference, quote, a number of companies are attributing the tax bill for being able to give higher wages to their employees, as well as being able to give a number of bonuses to their employees. How do you respond? She said, in terms of the bonus that corporate America receive versus the crumbs they are giving to workers to kind of put the schmooze on is so pathetic. It's so pathetic, Pelosi said. And I would hope that with the big advantage of bringing money home at a very low rate, that they would invest in infrastructure and things. But our experience has been that they will do dividends, they'll do stock buybacks and things like that. I think it's insignificant. Now, later she walked that back, but not before doubling and tripling down on it in public events before she ever backed off from it. Folks, they don't care about you. They don't care what your income is. They think that, as she said, those $3, $4, $5, even $1,000 bonuses that were passed out, billions, literally billions of dollars, corporations paid out immediately after the tax cuts went into effect for companies. $1,000, $2,000, $3,000, $5,000 means nothing to Nancy Pelosi. She and her husband are filthy rich. They have an empire that they live in and rule over in California. She didn't care about you. $1,000 to some people means the world. It means the ability to do things they never thought they could do. And in addition to those bonuses, pay raises, that means nothing to her. They all think that corporations should pay more. Forget about the fact that you've got to have more income coming in to be able to pay it. They want to talk about greediness at the corporate level. They don't even think about the hundreds and hundreds of thousands and millions of people like you and me that these corporations employ and what it takes to continue to be able to pay people like us on a weekly, monthly basis. And when that gets kicked up a little bit, just because we're good folks, and oh, by the way, the government reduced a little bit of what they're absconding from the company we work for in the form of taxes, and the company's passing some of that on to me, they don't even think about that. They don't care about that. It's only about power in Washington, D.C. And we're going to end this here. The power brokers are hungry. But while they're hungry, they are scared to death. They are losing their control. They're losing their hold on every part of your life because Donald Trump is giving America back to us. I am so sorry we went longer than we normally do, but we had some important things to talk about today, and you've heard them. You know, I guess the bottom line for me is the prism they look at the world in is different from our prisms. Their world is really insulated by the Potomac River. Inside the Beltway, lives are way different than those of us outside the Beltway experience in our lives. And more, they just don't understand and don't relate. And worse than that, they don't care, folks. They don't care. In coming days, we're going to have several congressmen visit with us live here for you. And we're going to talk to some people that really do care, that we know they care by their actions. We're going to ask them some very pointed questions about what's going on in your Washington, D.C., and my Washington, D.C., and our government. It's time. And we're stepping up. We're standing for what America is all about: freedom, justice, and liberty for all. Thank you so much for joining us today at dnewman.org. Have a great day. We'll talk again soon. So long, everybody.